is the Cloud Enough Podcast, your launchpad for Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloud Enough Podcast. My name is Andreas.
And my name is Michael.
We are brothers and freelancers focusing on Amazon Web Services. We do technical coaching, for example, for teams that start their journey with AWS. And we do infrastructure bootstrapping, typically based on our infrastructure as code templates for our clients worldwide. Every other week, we discuss a topic related to AWS in this podcast. One of us prepares the topic, which is not known to the other one. What's the subject today, Michael?
Yeah, Andreas, today we are going to talk about IP version 6 on AWS. So it's all about what is possible already and what makes sense to do at the moment. So that's the topic. So the new version of the IP protocol, which you might already heard of, right?
Of course, but I haven't looked into it. So I'm very interested in what you have prepared and what you have discovered with this topic on AWS. Let me mention one more thing, Michael. So this is episode 30. We are recording this on October the 23rd, and there will be a blog post covering the same topic then we go through when we talk about that in this episode. So you will find links to all of that in the show notes. And so that's all I have to say, Michael. We are ready to start.
Yes. So, Andreas, I have last week I stumbled upon a interesting news that fits very well into this topic. So I will start with that. It was announced that AWS paid over $100 million to get access to 4 million IP version 4 addresses, which means they basically paid $27 per IP version 4 IP address.
Wow.
And that shows pretty much the problem. IP version 4 addresses have become a very scarce resource because all the unallocated blocks that were available are now allocated to organizations. So the organizations that kind of allocate those IP address blocks and those companies are, or not companies, those organizations are called regional internet registries. For example, in the US, that's the ICANN. There's one in Europe, there's one in Africa, and one in Asia as well. And they basically have allocated the free IP address blocks that were available. But all of them are now out of IP addresses, which means there are no new IP addresses to use. And you basically have to, if you need IP version 4 addresses, public ones, you have to find someone and buy them from them. And that's what AWS did. And as we can imagine, AWS kind of is in trouble if they don't have enough IP version 4 addresses to spinning up their EC2 instances with public IPs. Mm. So they have a big motivation to kind of get access to those IP addresses. That makes a lot of sense, I think. Mm-hmm. So let's go a little bit more into details here. So an IP version 4 address is a 32-bit address, which means that there are around 4.3 billion possible IP addresses in this address range. And given that, we are reaching 8 billion people on planet Earth, that kind of already shows the problem. So there's not one IP address per human, for example. And there are people with multiple devices, and then things get tricky. There are servers as well. So it is obvious that this is a problem. And actually, that's not something that was discovered recently. So for many decades, this problem was known, and people started to work on a solution. And the solution to the problem is IP version 6. And the mind-blowing thing here is that an IP version 6 IP address is 128 bits long. And that doesn't sound that much longer, probably. It's 4 times longer than the 32-bit version. But the mind-blowing thing is that this basically increases the number of IP addresses to a number that is impossible to imagine. So it is called, the number is 340 sextillions IP addresses. So I have no idea how many IP addresses is it, but it's a lot of IP addresses, basically. So The big thing to understand here is that the IP address is so big now in IP version 6 that we don't have to care anymore about like the scarcity of IP addresses. So it's definitely not a scarce resource anymore in IP version 4.
So that also means that every device can get its own public IP address and we don't need any netting or stuff like that, what we currently do a lot on the internet probably.
Yeah, so that's one point, for example. And it goes even further. So for example, there are, and this is all kind of like in the, it's also kind of developing at the moment, but there are ideas that you as a person who gets access to the internet, you don't get a single IP address. So for example, you get a whole subnet.
Mm-hmm.
And those subnets are bigger than what we have today in the IP version 4 address range. So it's really like, I mean, every like light bulb can get its own IP address. And
I can have an Amazon Echo in every room and it's still enough.
Yes, so you can have a lot of Amazon Echoes and lots of rooms and it will still be fine. That's right. And what I now mentioned is like, this is one of the advantages of IP version 6. So it's the increased address range. But there are other benefits. And the key thing here to understand is that much of the improvements of IP version 6 will never be noticed by most of us, including myself. And I think that's okay. I'm fine with that. And that's also one of the reasons why we use AWS. I mean, we don't really want to understand the deep details of how networking works. I want to spin up an EC2 instance or a container, and then I want to get connectivity to the internet or to the other containers, and that's it. And AWS figures out for us how that works with IP version 6. But yeah, if the listeners are interested in the other benefits of IP version 6, then I will add a couple of links to the show notes for further learning. So I have read a book about IP version 6 that I really liked, and it was really complicated, like in terms of it really got down into the nitty-gritty details. So, that was my kind of introduction to IP version 6, and now I want to kind of outline a journey. How could you transition to IP version 6 on AWS? So what are the necessary steps, and where could it get a little bit more complicated, and what are the low-hanging fruits? So are you ready for that, Andreas?
Absolutely, Michael. Looking forward to that.
Okay. So the first obvious step is that you start with the public services first. So this means that you get or that you basically provide your end users IP version 6 connectivity. And what I also hadn't, I was not aware of that fact that today 30% of the internet traffic is IP version 6 already. And this is like a number that basically grows every year. And the other thing to understand here is that this is driven by mobile devices, and it is also varies heavily between countries. So there are countries that are, like in terms of IP version 6 adoption, are like pretty good, like more than 60% of the traffic is IP version 6, for example. And there are countries where the IP version 6 deployment is not yet like so popular. And I'm just opening the website from Google to give you a couple of examples. So for example, in the United States, more than 40% of the traffic is IP version 6 traffic. And in Germany, like the country where we live, it's around 50%. And there are also pretty small countries, like for example, Switzerland, it's also 40%. And then we have countries like India, where we have 50% IP version 6 adoption. And this is pretty cool. So it is also kind of driven by those emerging countries where we see, I mean, they don't have those big IP version 4 blocks. They just were basically too late to get access to those IP address blocks. So they really are forced to use IP version 6. So that's a really an interesting development. But if you are based in the US, it makes lots of sense because close to half of the users are using it already. So you can allow your users to benefit from it. So okay, and what do I mean by public services first? So let's go through the list of AWS services that are that offer public facing endpoints, and then we can see how well they support IP version 6 today. So I think one of the most basic building blocks that you need is the DNS infrastructure, so Route 53. It has IP version 6 support by default, so there's nothing to do for you. It is already ready, basically. Then we have the Content Delivery Network CloudFront. And with CloudFront, you have to enable IP version 6 support. It's just like a flag on your distribution. And if I understand it correctly, then for a couple of years now, this is by default enabled if you click through the UI to create a distribution. So you might already have enabled IP version 6. And when I first started using IP version 6 on AWS, that was exactly what I did. I switched the CloudFront distribution and turned on IP version 6 support. But that's not all you have to do. So one thing that I learned quickly is that you also have to add another DNS record. With Route 53, the way it works to point to CloudFront is you create an A record and of type alias. So that's kind of the AWS internal thing, the alias record. And for IP version 6 support, you create a so-called quad A record. So this is AAAA as a type, basically. So it's four A's. And then you point to your CloudFront distribution. And with the DNS record and IP version 6 enabled on the CloudFront distribution, the clients will now resolve the IP version 6 address of the distribution, and then they will send their traffic to the IP version 6 CloudFront servers. So that's easy. I mean, it's reasonably easy to enable that. Okay, next service. If you have an S3 bucket open to the public to or download files that are not behind CloudFront, you can also benefit from IP version 6. It's kind of on by default, but you have to use another, if you address your S3 objects, you have to change the DNS name slightly. So you have to add dual stack, basically somewhere in between of the DNS name of your bucket. And then you have an IP version 6 endpoint of S3. So that's also possible.
Okay, so the default DNS endpoint of S3 does not use IPv6, and there's a special endpoint for the dual stack.
Yes, that's right, Andreas. Okay, so let's continue this list. So what about API gateway? We have the REST, like API gateway REST edition, or I don't know how they even call it today. So the old one, the classic one. There we have two different types. We have the Edge version, and Edge basically means that API gateway deploys a CloudFront distribution for us that we cannot control. So that was the one they started with. And with this version, the Edge version, there's no IP version 6 support yet. So there's no way to kind of enable this IP version 6 feature on the CloudFront distribution. I mean, they just don't expose this functionality to us. If you have an API gateway and you really want to offer IP version 6 to your clients, then you can do the following trick. You create a regional API gateway, which is an API gateway without a CloudFront managed distribution by AWS, and you basically put your own CloudFront distribution in front of it and you enable IP version 6, and then everything is fine. So that's the workaround here. Then I was looking into AppSync, so that's kind of the GraphQL API gateway thing. It doesn't support IP version 6. IoT Core supports IP version 6 by default. And the funny story is that this was actually the first service in AWS that ever supported IP version 6. And I mean, if you understand this problem with the small devices and things like this, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
it makes sense.
And then we have last but not least, Global Accelerator. Mm. So Andreas, you wrote a longer blog post about that. It unfortunately doesn't support IP version 6 at the moment. So one thing to keep in mind with CloudFront is that even that CloudFront supports IP version 6 to the outside world, it still communicates to origins in IP version 4. So if your origin is IP version 6, that doesn't help because CloudFront will still make connections using IP version 4. But that's not a big deal in this case. You just want to offer your end users IP version 6. So in the case of CloudFront, that's super easy. You might miss one service, Andreas. So what about load balancers? So what about a load balancer that is public and your users connect directly to it? Load balancers are a little bit trickier because they run in a VPC. And because they run in a VPC, you have to first enable IP version 6 on a VPC. And that's a little bit more work. So are you ready for that, or do you have any questions so far?
No, ready for that. I have no idea how this works. So let's go through it.
Yeah, and this is also where it starts to change, or where I had some, it took me some time to really get this right, because it is a little bit different than what we do with VPCs today. So A VPC in AWS is never IP version 6 only. It always is IP version 4 enabled, and then you could optionally enable IP version 6. So this is what we call dual stack. So you get an IP version 4 address, and you optionally can have an IP version 6 address as well. So that's what we that's what is called dual stack. So you support IP version 4 and IP version 6. And if two IP version 6, like if an IP version 6 client wants to talk with an IP version 6 server, that's fine. It just works. And if they one of them only supports IP version 4, they will fall back to the IP version 4 protocol. So and now we look into how it works with AWS. So when you create a VPC today, you can specify the CIDR range of your VPC, right? You can choose from the private IP address ranges. And that's not longer the case. So with IP version 6, what happens is that you just get a IP address block assigned by AWS. And the block is actually pretty big. It's a /56 block. And remember, we have up to 128 bits. So that's a big block of IP addresses. Yeah, it's bigger than any VPC IP version 4 address range you can ever get. And what you get is a block of global unicast addresses. So this means first they are global. This means they are globally unique. This is like a public IP version 4 address. Then unicast address. So they are for unicast communication. If you like, and if you have an IP version 6 block because you work in a large organization that has its own IP version 6 block, that's possible as well to bring your own block to AWS. And there are certain limitations. And if this is your use case, definitely check out the documentation. But you will have people who understand this then better than I do. Yeah.
Okay, I have a question on that, Michael. So when I create a VPC and I enable IPv6, by default, I get a random IPv6 block. Is there any possibility to, for example, transfer that block to another VPC, another account or something? So in case I have to, delete the VPC or something or move it to another account?
I'm not aware of that.
But that's similar to what we have with an Elastic IP for the IP version 4 protocol, where we can basically reserve the IP address and transfer it to instances. The question is, if there's something similar to the VPC with IPv6. Okay, interesting.
If you get a block from AWS, I think it will, like if you, for example, come up with the plan to move to Azure later or something like this, I think it will be not possible to get this block moved to Azure because it's owned by AWS. It's like by default, it's an AWS, it's under AWS's management. So if you think about things like this, like portability, you better bring your own IP version 6 block. But don't ask me how complicated and expensive it is to get such a block here. So I haven't tried that. But it is possible. Okay, so that's the first thing to understand. VPCs now always have a /56 IP address range. And that is assigned by AWS, and it's a global from a global unicast address block. And now we create the subnets, right? So, in the good old IP version 4 world, what happened now is there was lots of meetings with network departments, and they figure out, okay, what's the smartest way to slice those blocks as small as possible, but still room to grow. And that took a lot of time. And the good news is, Andreas, that's not needed anymore with IP version 6. A subnet is always a /64 IP address block. And /64 is still a pretty big block. So it's much bigger than what you have today in the IP version 4 world. So all subnets are of similar size and they are so big. So basically the limitation today is that, you will run out of IP version 4 addresses in a subnet because all the instances still need an IP version 4 address.
Exactly.
So you cannot really utilize this.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. So the IP version 4 addresses is still my limit because each instance needs at least one of those.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
It's probably not the instance, it's probably every network interface needs its own.
Yeah, that's right. If you really look into the details, then at the end, in the VPC, only the Elastic Network Interface are of importance. Yeah. So that's it. So the network topology kind of changes a little bit, and you don't need to do much work anymore because lots of this stuff is kind of predefined. And now we have a VPC that's IP version 6 enabled, great. But we still need to think about how we connect to the internet. We get global unicast addresses. But if you don't have a route to the internet, I mean, that doesn't help us much because we still cannot communicate to the internet. So the good old internet gateway is still there. So that's the same resource that we use for IP version 6. You create a route in your route table. The only thing that changes is that the CIDR notation for IP version 6 looks a little bit different. It's ::\0, so that's kind of matching all the IP addresses. And then you are fine. But there is something new, and I really like this. It's called an egress-only internet gateway. And it does exactly what the name says. So this is like one of the cases where naming in where AWS got naming right. So they just name it in a way that you understand what it does. It provides access only to the internet. So only outgoing connections to the internet, egress only. This means you can send packets to the internet, but no one can originate or no one can establish a connection from the internet to your instances. So that's basically a way to run your workloads with a public IP address, but still make sure that no one can connect to them from the outside world.
So, Michael, so regarding, do you know about the costs? So NAT gateway and traffic through NAT gateway is quite expensive. What's about the costs for traffic going through the egress-only internet gateway?
As far as I know, this is just like the regular AWS traffic. So there's no additional charge for the egress-only internet gateway. So it makes like the, and this is like the good news, the whole NATing thing is going, it doesn't exist anymore. There are no NAT gateways anymore.
Cool stuff. And another question, just for me to get that right. So DVPC is dual stack. So I have IP version 4 and IP version 6. Mm-hmm. So does that mean I just don't use the IP version 4 protocol for outbound communication and just have an internet egress-only internet gateway, and I can't use IP version 4 to connect to the outside world.
I mean, if you use IP version 4, then so egress-only internet gateway only works with IP version 6, as far as I know.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if you connect to an IP version 4 IP address, it basically goes through maybe your NAT gateway, whatever you configured in this routing table. And if you connect to an IP version 6 IP address, then it throws through the egress-only internet gateway.
Okay. And if I don't use a NAT gateway, I can only do IP version 6 traffic outside of the VPC.
Yes, probably. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. But that's probably not a big deal because what about the AWS APIs? So when I talk to, let's say, DynamoDB and stuff?
Yeah. So this is also something that I wanted to talk about. So the AWS API is IP version 4 only. So this doesn't help you in any sense. Yeah, it's an IP version 4 only thing.
That's unfortunate.
But yeah, I mean, it's also not the benefit that you would get is I mean, okay, you could save the NAT gateway costs, but you could also just get rid of the NAT gateway today, and that would also solve the problem. But okay, so the key thing to understand with the NAT gateway, the removal of the NAT gateway, is that in IP version 6, the goal is so-called end-to-end connectivity. So you send a packet from an IP address to another IP address, and there's nothing magically in between that changes those IP addresses. So you have end-to-end connectivity. So that's the key idea of IP version 6. And AWS seems to support that idea as well, because, I mean, NAT gateway is not an option. It's not possible to route IP version 6 traffic. So that's nice. Another thing to understand is that there are no private IP version 6 addresses in a VPC anymore. So all you get is this global unicast address, which is basically a public IP address. And I mean, today people fear public IP addresses. Yeah, they get crazy if something has a public IP address attached. And with IP version 6, I mean, you have to get used to it because that's kind of the only thing you have. What you also get, like if you spin up an EC2 instance, what this instance also gets is a so-called link local address. And the link local address is, like this is an IP version 6 thing, it's not related to AWS. The link local address works within, like in AWS terms, it works within a subnet. So if you spin up two EC2s in the same subnet, you can talk to each other using the link local address. And the link local address is not something that you see in the AWS console, you can see it on a Linux machine with ifconfig, for example. So that is kind of the private IP address of IP version 6, because whenever a router sees such a link local address, it will just drop it. So it cannot kind of leave the link. So it is blocked at the link layer. So whenever it reaches the router, it is not routed into another subnet. And that's why you can only communicate within a subnet. You cannot communicate from a subnet to another subnet using the link local address. So I don't think that it is very helpful in AWS. So you will just use the global unicast address of the IP of the instance to talk to each other. Because otherwise you always get into these problems of crossing subnet borders and things like this. So what is a typical, like today we have this public private VPC setups, right? We have public subnets, we have private subnets. And I think the translation into the IP version 6 world is that the public subnet is kind of, it stays as it is. You have to route to the internet gateway, and that's why it's public. And the only thing that changes here is that now those instances have all IP version 6 addresses. And then we have the private subnets. And I don't think that there's yet like a pattern emerged. So I did some research, and also the AWS documentation is not really, there's not much about IP version 6 topologies of networks. But I think what we will see is that a private subnet basically will be a subnet with a route to the egress only gateway. So kind of a private subnet with a NAT gateway from like the connectivity perspective. I mean, you could also get rid of the egress only gateway completely so that you don't have access to the internet as well from the private subnets. And that's also an option. So those are the two options. And there's not really, it's not really like something that is like predefined. That's the good way of doing it. That's the bad way of doing it. If you need to connect to the internet, then you would attach an egress only gateway basically. The next question is, how do you get those IP addresses? And by default, AWS assigns the IP address to the Elastic Network Interface when it starts up using DHCP version 6. So there's nothing for you to do. I mean, it's the same way that it works today. Just you get an IP address. You could, if you like, manage the IP address manually, as you can do today as well with IP version 4. So you can configure the ANI with a specific IP address. It's not recommended, and it gets completely unmanageable, basically. And with auto-scaling groups and stuff like this, it's not possible at all. The next question here is, now we have the VPC topology, so how do we secure the traffic? And I think the answer is that you use security groups. Because with IP version 6, I mean, the idea is this end-to-end connectivity. So one IP talks to another IP, right? So the only way to really implement a sufficient traffic policy is at this level, and this is the Elastic Network Interface level. So it's a security group that you use to control what traffic is allowed to enter this thing and what traffic is allowed to leave that thing. So I think that security groups will be, and this is what I also think for IP version 4, are the one and only thing to control your network traffic. And access control lists, in my opinion, I mean, they are kind of a second layer of defense in IP version 4 world. I don't think that they will help you much in IP version 6 because the subnets are so big. I mean, today you could have access control lists where you basically kind of control a little bit which subnet is allowed to talk to which other subnet. But subnets now are so big, so I'm not sure if that really makes much sense anymore. But we will see how this develops. But from my perspective, make sure that you get the security groups right, and then you should be fine. And there's not yet a pattern how to really deal with IP version 6 on access control lists in AWS. At least I'm not aware of it. So yeah, that's kind of the same story then today. So recommendation is security groups.
And the security groups, I have to add different rules for IPv4 and IPv6 probably. Is that correct?
Yes. So if you use a CIDR notation, like if you address IP address ranges, then you have to use the IP version 6 notation. But if you reference security groups, then there's no change. Yeah. And the ports is like IP version 4, like ports are not part of IP of the IP protocol. So the ports are still the same basically in security groups. But if you refer, like for example, if you allow traffic from the public internet from all the IP addresses, then this looks different than today in your security group.
And the when two EC2 instances communicate with each other when you have IPv6 enabled, does that also mean they talk to each other over IPv6 by default, or is that something I have to configure on my Linux system somewhere? Or
yeah, so that's a question of the operating system, that's right. And the thing is that if you run a modern operating system, they always, or most of them, prefer IP version 6. So basically what they do is they try IP version 6, and if that's not going to work, they fall back to IP version 4. And I tested it with Amazon Linux too, but that's, I mean, I, in the book that I read, it was mentioned that that's the default. And this book is, I don't know, it's the third edition and it was printed a couple of years ago. So that definitely is better today than it was when the book was published. Okay. So Andreas, the next step now, we can actually talk about the load balancers, right? So that was where I am when I last talked about load balancer, I had to make this little we had to make this road trip through VPC configs, and now we are back to load balancers. Okay, an application load balancer that is internet facing can support IP version 6 if you enable it. And also don't forget to add the Quad A record, otherwise your users will not be able to communicate with the load balancer using IP version 6. So that's kind of not a big deal and not a big change as well. And make sure that the security group attached to the load balancer allows traffic from IP version 6 addresses then as well. And basically for all the other load balancers and load balancer schemes, like internet facing or internal, the answer is there's no IP version 6 support. So network load balancers don't support IP version 6. Classic load balancers don't support IP version 6. And internal load balancers also don't support IP version 6. So that's kind of the rules here. So the only thing that really supports it is the application load balancer. And as same as with CloudFront, an ALB will always communicate to the target using IP version 4. So your targets, if your targets are IP version 6 enabled, that doesn't help much because the load balancer will still communicate using IP version 4.
Okay. Wow, I didn't expect that. So I expected that the network load balancer, an internet facing one, is IPv6 ready. So this is only a few years old. So you should she should assume that they implemented that. But okay. Wow.
Yeah. So I think the network load balancer is one of the load balancers that will probably receive it, the support for IPv6 next. And I don't think that classic load balancer will receive it. I'm not sure, but yeah, I mean, it's the classic one. The one thing I read, and I'm not really an expert on EC2 Classic, so that's the, like, if you have a really old AWS account, then you can have access to EC2 Classic. And my understanding is that with EC2 Classic, the classic load balancer supports IPv6 as well, but this was just something that I read in the documentation, so I'm not 100% sure. Okay, but if you are in the EC2 Classic world, then you definitely should check out everything that I said, because it only applies to the VPC world, right? So I talked about VPCs here. They are not available in EC2 Classic. So,
Michael, what about all the other resources that I can place into my VPCs? What about EC2 instances, RDS, and so on?
Yeah, so an EC2 instance, if it uses a more modern instance type, like the documentation says, if it's of the current generation, whatever that actually means, then it supports IPv6. And there are a couple of other instance types that also support it. C3, R3, I2 also support it. So, I mean, if you use, like, for example, an M3 medium, it probably doesn't. But if you use something like an M5 and then you have IPv6 support. But still, even if your IC2 instance type supports it, still you have to make sure that you get such an IP address. So there are two ways to get such an IP address. You can either configure it on the subnet to say, okay, by default, it's called auto-assign IPv6. That's also possible for IPv4. So should an instance or should a network interface automatically receive a public IP4 or an IPv6 address? So that's the subnet layer where you can configure it. So that's a convenient option. But you can also, like, if you launch an EC2 instance, you can explicitly tell it to get an IPv6 address. So that's also an option. One thing I stumbled upon is that for whatever reason, that it doesn't make any sense, CloudFormation does not allow us to configure a subnet with both IPv4 and IPv6 auto assignment turned on. And the documentation also says that's not possible. So it's an either or decision. It is actually not. So you can do it with the UI, you can do it with the CLI. So the API supports it, but CloudFormation doesn't. So I don't know why. It's just like it's a check that doesn't make any sense, and like they validate something that is not. that is not necessary. So maybe it was back in the days, I don't know, but today the check doesn't make any sense. So it is possible to configure it this way using the CLI in the UI. But yeah, that's just one kind of a problem I was running into, but okay. Then what else can we launch into VPCs? For example, we can launch an RDS database. It doesn't support IP version 6, so it's always IP version 4. Fargate does not support IP version 6. Lambda does not support IP version 6. And I mean, I now can tell a lot of services they don't support IP version 6. The question is this really such a big problem? So I think in terms of IP version 6 adoption, I mean, it definitely is. So if you reach, like from your Lambda function, you make a call to an API that is IP version 6 enabled, you cannot use that because the Lambda is not, it's IP version 4 only, so it will fall back to IP version 4. So, I mean, I don't think it's not probably not the highest priority to fix that. That's it. I think it doesn't make that. There's lots of effort on AWS's side, and the benefits are basically very, very limited.
But one benefit would be, so that's probably also the reason why I can't have an IPv6 only VPC, because basically I can't do much when I do so. So the benefit would be if all the services would support IPv6, I could also have a IPv6 only VPC. And then get rid of the limitations of IP version 4 with all the address range, yeah. Maybe. Is that?
But the problem is that there is lots of IP version 4 out there in the world. So, I mean, at some point in time, we will have IP version 6 only networks. But I think this will take, I don't know, so maybe we can talk about if you have like a gray beard, or how's it called? Like if you are like 20 years older.
My hair
older,
is already
can,
really gray.
Yes. We can have the same conversation and we can see how it evolves. But I mean, things are moving slowly, and this is like for many companies and many large networks. So this is expensive to change, and they like every, I don't know, 15 years or so, they change the equipment. So it takes some time until everyone is IP version 6 enabled. So dual stack is totally fine.
Yeah, it feels a little bit to me that AWS is a little bit late to that party, right? So I don't know, they started 20 years ago. They should, maybe they should have thought about that from the beginning. I don't know.
I'm not sure. So I don't think that any other cloud provider is better. And I don't think that much, like I haven't, like I, for like even large enterprise customers we worked with, I mean, I haven't seen many networks that are IP version 6 ready. So and most of them are not even dual stack. I think it's just like, this is something that takes a lot of time to transition, and there's a lots of developing going on still. So lots of questions are not really answered, and there's lots of things changing in the like in the committees where things are discussed and standardized. So it's really still in kind of development mode. I mean, parts are like stable and deployed, but there are still open questions. Yeah. But a funny note that, and this kind of goes into the same direction. So I checked a couple of websites if they are IP version 6 enabled. So for example, Google is IP version 6 enabled. But Amazon.com is not, and so that was a surprise, because, I mean, and it looks like that they use CloudFront, so there at least is some CloudFront DNS names when I resolve the DNS name, but it's IP version 4 only, and I'm not sure why, but they might have a reason, and I think there, like in the early days of IP version 6, there were problems with if clients have not proper support, or sometimes IP version 6 was significantly slower, which it shouldn't be. It should be actually faster. So maybe they haven't switched because this will impact a very small amount of clients out there. But yeah, this is just like a funny side note. So yeah, Andreas, that's kind of it. That's all I learned about IP version 6 on AWS recently. And yeah, I don't know if there's any like question that you have, or if I should end this here with my summary and my recommendations.
Okay, so maybe one thing. So we talked about the AWS APIs, and you said they are IP version 4 only. So I think that's a little bit of a bummer, because that would be really cool if I could replace my NAT gateway with that egress only internet gateway. So that would be on my top one IPv6 AWS wish list, so that they have all their APIs IPv6 enabled. Shouldn't be that hard to achieve, actually.
Yeah, I mean that. I mean, if they're using network node balancers, then probably that's the problem. But if they're using application load balancer kind of stuff, then that should be easy. Yeah, I mean, we don't know. Maybe they use something different. But yeah, so there are definitely lots of things that AWS has to do to achieve IP version 6 support, like 100% IP version 6 support. Yeah, we will see how this evolves. Okay, so what should you actually do? So, like, if you run workloads on AWS, what are the next steps? So my recommendation is this. So there's a fact that basically you cannot deny. It's IP version 6 is coming. So you cannot ignore the problem. I mean, if you ignore the problem, then at some point in time you will run into issues. So it is very obvious that this is something that you have to deal with. So at some point in time, you have to start the journey. So for now, I recommend enabling IP version 6 for the endpoints that are public facing. So everything that end users connect to, I would highly recommend to turn on IP version 6. So this is CloudFront. So if you have API gateways, then you have to do this little workaround using a regional one with CloudFront again. If your application load balancer is public facing, then you should turn IP version 6 on the application load balancer. And this is actually, this is not much effort for you, but it just enables IP version 6 for all the, like, 40% of the customers, basically, that you serve. So that's a good thing to do. And I don't see much benefit today in enabling IP version 6 in your VPC, to be honest. And the only exception is that if you have an application load balancer and you want to expose this thing directly to the internet without CloudFront in front of it, then this is like you have to enable IP version 6 on your VPC. Otherwise, this is not going to work.
Another use case would be if you have EC2 instances that you want to that are accessible from the internet, then it helps as well.
Yeah. So if you have one instance that is accessible from the internet, yeah. So I don't know if okay, if that's the use case, then yeah, that's also right as well. So as I mentioned, I don't see much benefit in doing IP version 6 on the VPC now, but still, at some point in time, it probably gets more interesting. And I think this whole egress only gateway thing is also interesting for getting rid of the NAT gateway and all these taxes that you pay for your traffic.
I would also say when you start now, create a VPC and build up your network architecture and everything, maybe it's a good idea to enable IPv6 because then you don't have to do it later. And because, you know, when you do it right now, you have everything in place. And you don't have to do any transition or migration later. Maybe that's another reason to enable it now, even if you don't use it.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not a lot of effort to enable it. I mean, it's just basically, I mean, if you're used to UI, then it's just a click in CloudFormation. It's another line. It is not a lot of effort, but it also not a lot of benefits. But you could save some migration efforts later on. That's right. Okay, Andreas. That's all I have. As I mentioned, I put two links into the show notes. One is a reInvent talk from 2017 about IP version 6. It starts with an introduction of IP version 6, and then roughly in the middle, they start about how AWS implements it and why they choose, for example, using global unicast address only, and all kinds of decisions are explained. So that's an interesting video. And I also link the book that I read, and I don't recommend it. Like, if you are just interested in turning on IP version 6 on AWS, I wouldn't read it. So it goes like far beyond what you need to get IP version 6 running on AWS. But if you really want to understand everything underneath and why it is all the benefits, then you can read through that book. So that's it, Andreas. Anything you want to mention here at the end?
Thank you very much, Michael, for preparing this topic. This was really interesting to me. I think what I have two things to mention. So first of all, there will be a Cloud on Out Plus video covering the same topic and going more into details. So if you're interested in that, check out our Cloud on Out Plus offering. You will find links to that in the show notes. And also, it would help us very much if you would share and spread the word about the Cloud on Out podcast. So share it with your friends, coworkers, share it on social media. This really helps us to keep the show running. That would help us very much. Thank you very much, Michael. And we will speak to each other in 2 weeks. Bye.
Yeah. Thanks, Andreas. Bye.